This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the Punt Intended Podcast, a Dynasty Fantasy Basketball podcast and a Sports Ethos production. I'm your host, Mark C., the Dynasty leader over at Sports Ethos. You can find me at MacAttack145 on Twitter and my writings and rankings over at SportsEthos.com. And before we get into the prospect we're going to discuss today, first want to let you all know that our 2024 NBA draft profiles dropped earlier this week. Right now, there is 30 names in there, and we're going to be adding more and more as we get up to the draft. In there, you'll see some detailed general scouting notes, what it means for fantasy, what sort of output we can see. We got some nice graphs that show you, basically 9-cat rankings for each stat, and show you even a year 1, year 2, and year 4 timeline to kind of give you an idea of where this player could grow and where they could rank in fantasy. So that will give you an idea of a horizon for players, maybe a little bit of safety versus upside if you're drafting in your rookie drafts. So be sure to check out, again, that's going to be the 2024 NBA draft profiles over at sportsethos.com, and you can see those with an NBA Fantasy Pass subscription. But now, let's get into the prospect we're going to talk about today. And today, we're just going to be detailing one. We're going to do a little bit of quick hitters over the next couple of days, just so you all can listen to these and prep yourselves on prospects before the NBA draft. And today's prospect that we're going to talk about is Johnny Furphy. And he's a guard slash forward, so basically a wing, and has a wing height of about 6'7.5", wingspan of 6'8", so kind of your average size, maybe a slightly larger size wing, about 190 pounds, so he looks a little small out there, not maybe the most built, but still decent length and decent enough size for his position. He'll be ending the draft at 19.5, and he played his freshman year at Kansas University. One of the big blue buds out there. And I'll just start off, I wasn't honestly that impressed by him, but we'll start into some things I did like with him. And first is his catch and shoot mechanics, which I think those were really solid. He had a really quick release, looked unbothered by contest, and his catch mechanics were very smooth and repeatable over the volume of his shots. Now, I'm not exactly sure about his shot versatility. That's where some of the questions about his shooting on the upper end come from me. He did have some movement shooting flashes. I thought he was decent running off a screen, but there wasn't the volume that you like to see from a prospect that's kind of billed as a shooter, and that's his skill. I think we saw enough flashes. I think the volume can get there. It just wasn't currently on the tape. He averaged about 6.3s attempted per 75 possessions, which, I mean, that's a decent volume, but it's not something where you're like, oh, wow, this guy is a shooter. This guy is going to be a monster shooter. We've seen higher volumes from players even in this draft class alone. He did hit them at about a 35% clip, which is decent. But again, a majority of those were catch and shoots. Some of the more movement or more difficult shot attempts, he did shoot a little worse on them. And so, just to give you the makes, that's 2.4 makes per 75 possessions, which is a decent number. It's not super strong, though. It's something that, if you're drafting him for his threes, it's more decent threes. Not necessarily, yes, he's really helping you pump up this category threes. And so that versatility, I mean, again, I think it's something it can improve at, but I don't think it's going to be there right away in the NBA. He might be more just more of a catch-and-shoot threat, which again, I think he's excellent at. I think that's why I have some faith in him working on those other aspects of his shooting game. In terms of his running off screen and movement, I did think he was a fairly active cutter. He would sometimes just randomly pop up under the basket for uncontested layups, even in half-court settings, which, I mean, come on, defense first, what are you doing? But kind of displays a little bit of sneaky get-open ability, which I actually do think is somewhat of an ability. That was somewhat my game when I would play pickup, is I would just kind of lose my defender and pop up for cuts and get found for easy layups. So I respect that in Furphy's game. I like how he kind of could slink away and get open easily. In terms of some of his ball handling and on-ball creation, it wasn't too great. I did see some things that I like, though. I thought he could run some very basic pick-and-roll things and just make the right simple read. Nothing major, though, and the volume on this is very low. And so talking about some of his passing stats and why they're so bad, I mean, he only averaged 1.8 assists per 75 possessions, good for a 7.1 assist rate. I mean, that's pretty poor. We see those numbers, and we're not thinking he's providing too much in the passing game. And I know I just talked about his ability to run some basic pick and roll and make the right read. It was a little there. It wasn't too often, though. And it's probably just not going to be a tool that's utilized by teams at the NBA level. He's not going to be good enough at just passing guys open and making quick enough reads. However, in terms of his connectivity, I thought he actually did make some signs and really a lot of indications of this nice snappy passes within the flow of the offense, which, you know, that's not going to count for fantasy, but it does matter if you play on the court. If you're already not passing well and you're stopping the ball when it gets to you, that's kind of a recipe to not see minutes. So the fact that I think he can play within a flow of an offense, keep the ball moving, is a really good positive in that regard. However, going in maybe a bit in the opposite direction here, I thought he could tend to force passes a little bit into players that were contested or being denied the ball. That was mainly for Hunter Dickinson in the post, who was he was kind of a big post player at Michigan, transferred to Kansas this past season, and was kind of their star player. So I don't want to necessarily discredit Furphy too much for that. I think he was kind of just running the play. And that was a general criticism for him, that I thought his passing was sometimes a little bit more in the play structure and not as much creativity, which signifies that lack of passing upside we talked about earlier. But he did only have about 1.5 turnovers per 75 possessions and a 10.3% turnover rate. So I think some of those errant passes were more he was just trying to play within the structure and the flow of the offense rather than him just making bad reads or being a bad passer. That said, extending on some of the lack of on-ball upside that we talked about, his dribble and handle were kind of slow and he was a little hesitant in seeing windows that he could take advantage and power through and really drive through, and that really displayed itself on closeouts. I didn't see too many signs of him on film really attacking closeouts and utilizing, you know, pump fakes or his shot to that advantage. I think some players that we have seen use that, I'm thinking of Mikal Bridges when he's on the Suns, and he could pump fake, make a little bit of some dribbles into the paint or towards the paint, and then find the next pass and keep the advantage flowing. Furphy didn't really do that as much, and I don't love seeing that from a player just in terms of projecting their usage and on-ball things as a shooter. That's something that's almost the next step for shooters to develop in their game, is using the threat of their shot to draw on the defense, draw on hard closeouts, and then be able to make an additional play off of that. Furphy doesn't have that in his profile yet. And his overall handler craft is fairly non-existent. I think he does have decent ball security, as we discussed, with his turnover rate, but I mean, he's not even doing simple crossovers or simple step backs or anything. He's kind of just dribbling with one hand, maybe trying to drive to the basket. If it's not there, then he just has to kind of pause, collect himself, and then pass it back out, and plays dead at that point. On his driving game, I really don't think Furphy uses his body all that well. He takes a more looping path to the basket, doesn't really position himself, like try to use his body and his shoulder to get by the defender. It's just kind of running along them. Doesn't really generate an advantage off the dribble. It could be a little bit of a lack of quickness on his end. And talking about some of his field goal number or field goal percentage numbers now, he had a 47% field goal percentage overall, which isn't too bad. Majority of his shots were threes, about 60% of his shots were threes. So if we're talking just inside the arc, his two-point field goal percentage was decent, about 65%. But the volume was so scarce. It was on about 2.5 attempts per game. It's almost, like, if you just look at the individual two-point percentage, you might say, oh, yeah, he's a good finisher. That's pretty good. But the fact that it happens so rarely actually says to me he's not actually good at getting to the rack and being able to score inside. It's more just him piling up maybe the occasional duck in for a layup that we talked about earlier, or just getting an attempt in transition, and maybe the errant runner or layup here or there. But I don't think he's much of an interior player or interior finisher at this point in his career. And lastly, how heavily is Furphy involved in the offensive side of the ball and in general offensive actions? He only had about a 17.6% usage rate, really pretty low. That's below average at the NBA level. That's even lower for college. Well, it's the same in college. There's still five players on the court. But generally, you're going to see your usage dip a little bit from college to the pros, unless you're one of the superstar on-ball creator types. And they only average about 16.1 points per 75 possessions. Not really too strong in that regard either. So, yeah, Furphy on the offensive end, I do like the shooting. I think he has really good bones there, really good roots to build off of. Everything else in the game, I'm pretty out on, honestly. Let's go to the defensive side of the ball with Johnny Furphy. I thought generally his awareness and activity was very strong. I thought he was pretty decently well aware of screens that were coming at him and avoiding them, and being able to stick with his man. There were some lapses on film where he struggled getting over screens. I'm not saying he's super slithery. He's not a fantastic screen navigator, but he generally was really active, really aware, and generally stayed with his man well enough to not ruin the whole defensive scheme. That being said, his on-ball defense was a little shaky and questionable for me. I thought Furphy, you could really see in the tape him have these defensive fundamentals drilled into him and him really stick to them, such as sliding your feet, shuffling well, trying to stay off his man, trying to not foul. But his lateral quickness was just very iffy. There were a lot of blow-bys on the tape where the defenders just took a hard dribble drive and just drove right by him, and Furphy offered very little resistance to that because he couldn't get in front of him. In addition, quick changes of direction also tripped him up. And that might, talking about a quick crossover to the other side or a quick Euro step or something like that. Furphy didn't deal too well with those either. So his lateral mobility I don't think it's at a point where it's good. Could improve with just additional NBA development and athletic training. But it was already some orange warning signs going off in my head at the college level. It's only going to be worse at the NBA level. Furphy on the defensive glass, I thought, though, was really energetic, which I always like seeing energy on the glass. But I thought he could use his size and frame a little better. But generally, I think his rebounding was a pretty positive aspect of his game. Nothing too great, but a nice little positive. Had about a 16% defensive rebound rate and about a little under 12% total rebound rate, which was good for 8.8 boards per 75 possessions. Pretty solid for a wing. We talked about earlier, he's maybe not the largest wing. He has some room to grow that a little more. But that's still pretty good rebounding numbers for his position and size. I thought he also has some decently quick hands. He had some good poke-ins and swipes. Now, some of that was because he would get beat and would have to resort to that. But I think he was pretty aware of when he could try to reach in for the ball and get that steal, create that defensive opportunity. Had a 2.1 steal percentage and about 1.0 steals per 75 possessions. Usually 2% steal threshold is what we're looking for, so he's kind of right about there. So I'm not saying he's great there, but I think he's pretty solid, can provide a little bit in that event creation on defense that I especially like seeing in prospects. So what does this mean for Johnny Furphy overall? I think he has signs of an NBA wing shot, but that's really his only calling card right now. Every other aspect of his game, to me, is fairly middling. That ranges from a lack of much on-ball creation flashes, an underwhelming handle, and defensive and lateral mobility issues. I think Furphy's shot can get more dynamic and allow him to play into an NBA rotation with some further development. But even with that in mind, it's hard to see some great upside here. And for me, Furphy probably tops out as a fringe starting option in the NBA. So translating that to fantasy, he's a player that I'm unsure if he hits, really. I mean, I kind of did not sound all too positive on him. But even if he does hit, where's the fantasy upside coming from? And what stats are you really getting from him that are going to help your team in a transformative way? I mean, I think with that framing in mind, how much minutes are we expecting? And that's going to affect some of his counting stats. Because of that, I think he'll be average in threes. I think he could get stronger in threes if he sees, a starter's minutes loads, 28 plus. I just don't think that's very likely for him. So I think he's going to be average in threes. I think he'll get some steals, some boards. The volume may vary on a year-to-year basis or where he develops. I think his field goal percentage won't be that great, and he didn't really generate enough volume at the line for free throw percentage to be in much consideration here. We talked about that lack of good driving ability earlier, and I just can't see him getting enough volume at the line for that to be a huge factor in his fantasy game. Furphy, he'll score some points just as a basis of him hitting some threes, but I think the scoring is going to be below average with the usage that we're forecasting for him. And because of that, he's not going to have many assists, but little turnovers. He's not going to hurt you there. And the blocks were just not really a huge part of his game. You're not going to get many blocks from him. So Johnny Furphy is a player I'm probably not all too excited to draft. And I think he's going to be pretty low down not only my on-court big board, but also my fantasy big board. I just don't really see where he's going to cause you a lot of regret for passing up. And I think there's going to be better upside options scattered throughout the list for Johnny Furphy.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
With the NBA draft coming up now, and especially kind of coming off a Johnny Furphy, who I think has a good, maybe decent floor or median, I thought that'd be a good segue to talk about how we discuss median versus upside in Dynasty Fantasy Basketball. And this can sometimes be a point of contention, whether it's in negotiations with other managers, in a rookie Dynasty draft, or player evaluations, and even a point of contention, I think, amongst our individual selves, if we're just talking to ourselves about deals or all these moves we want to make. So I think to really talk about this subject, we have to define what we even mean by median versus upside. So for me, a median player or a safe floor player is someone we feel safe about their standing in rotations. We feel like they're a player that no matter what changes around them, no matter what happens, they're going to see a good rotation role. They're a good NBA player. But they probably don't have room to really grow themselves, to maybe see more usage, see more counting stats, or just really advance your game to a point that's going to drastically change your value. And we don't see, you know, that on-ball creation or defensive monster. I think some players that I think kind of envision this, Tobias Harris was probably the poster child for years of this type of player. CJ McCollum, maybe saw some increased usage here and there, just if, you know, Damian Lillard was out or some players on the Pelicans had been out. But we kind of knew what to expect from him. Clint Capela, yeah, he was never going to handle the ball all too much. That just wasn't his role. His role was to gobble up boards, play some defense, finish lobs, finish layups. Wendell Carter Jr., I think we're seeing that now a little bit from him, where he's, a perfectly credible starting NBA center. And that's probably about it. And I think that's kind of what we envision when we see median or floor players. So what does upside mean? I think they're generally players who we like their physical tools. We can see them developing and becoming a force. We can see them becoming a strong enough on-ball creator that they demand usage. We like their advanced metrics, whether that's playmaking or shot making in smaller samples, whether that's their block or steal rates or rebound rates in limited minutes. We just say, these are players that if they see usage or minutes, they're going to skyrocket and become awesome. So I think some players of that in recent years, Tyrese Haliburton, we saw in some small samples with the Kings, really liked his game. Kind of one of those analytical darlings in the draft. And once he got those usage, got those minutes in Indiana, he really took off. Alperen Sengun, kind of a limited sample size. Again, another analytic draft darling. Got his chance this year, got the starting center role finally, and really blossomed with that. Anthony Simons, who a younger player, and I guess this is another thing with upside. Age. I think dynasty players, or managers rather, love young players because they can be anything. They have so much potential. And Anthony Simons was one of the youngest players in the league. I guess his first season, not his second season, but he was still one of those younger players and got some time to develop and is now a pretty solid on-ball creator. We're talking about some losses or misses. Alexei Pokusevsky was the poster child for this. Wow, he's good measurables. Look at these stats, limited per 36 stats, if only he got minutes usage. Zion Williamson, I think, is a little bit of this example, a little sapped by injuries, but this athletic monster who we wanted to see dominate. We can envision what he could be. Patrick Williams, a little bit, was talked about like that. RJ Barrett, a little bit like that, but just never developed their, never seemed to translate their physical tools into on-court production, really. So, when we're looking at median versus upside, how do we decide? How do we make a decision? And some of it just comes to your own evaluation. Do you trust this player to develop? Maybe you are higher on a player, which is perfectly fine. I think with young players, there's any developing players, can be a decent range of outcomes for them. And we have to decide if that's worth it versus, you know what, I feel very confident in this player. I don't think he's going to grow much more, but I like what he can give me in that regard. Some of it can be team context. Does your dynasty roster have players that have room for growth? Do you want to maybe balance out that risk profile a little bit and maybe get a little more certainty, or what you perceive to be certainty, on your roster? Or does your team need that upside injection to get to a point where you want it to go? Do you need that shot of shooting for the moon to really transform your team from maybe a middling playoff team to a tier one contender, or even just from, hey, I'm starting a rebuild, I need some built around players on my team? Do your league settings justify you waiting on players to develop? Some leagues, they have minors where you can stash players for quite a long time. They don't even count to your roster size. So it's kind of freebies in that regard. That's a good stash for even second round draft prospects that you like and you think can become something in time. Do you have deep benches where you can afford to put players and not start them? Some leagues, you know, they only start five players. We have eight player benches. Yeah, I can put some players in, you know, my seventh or eighth bench slots, and I'm not, I don't need to see time, and it's not going to hurt my day-to-day production today. Or does your league maybe have small benches, which is the opposite problem? Every player on your team needs to play. What are the keeper rules in your league? Is it worth keeping a player and, you know, by the time they may hit or start producing for you, they're actually not worth keeping anymore? Or maybe you're in a salary league where it becomes too cost prohibitive to keep a player and it's really not worth waiting on them. I think another sneaky context that needs to be factored in is your league daily set lineups versus weekly setting. For daily, I've tended to find that I want more playable options on a day-to-day basis just to help myself accumulate valuable stats in production, which means I want more depth, which means I want players who can help me more today rather than maybe waiting on players who are in the G League or still waiting behind some other players or still developing. Weekly, I think you want to go more for that upside. If you only start a certain number of players in your lineup, there's probably, you know, let's say you know, if you're in a 30-team league and you're looking at your roster slots 6th or 7th, that's probably between, you know, player 150, 180th on a rankings basis versus, you know, 210 to 230. That difference in production isn't that great. Like, you can afford to play your 7th player some weeks and be fine. You're not going to miss much. But hitting on a player that, you know, let's say he was 300th for two seasons and then suddenly became a top 100 player year 3, yeah, that player makes a lot bigger difference in basically by the time he hits versus what you maybe have lost in those, you know, year 1, year 2. I kind of hope that made sense, but basically, you know, your right tail outcomes, your higher side outcomes are going to be so much more valuable than, you know, your little victories here and there. And that's really actually something I'm trying to work on improving myself in. I tend to be someone who prefers sometimes going for those plus expected value plays, which, you know, are plays that are likely to return value in the long run. But at the end of the day, those upside wins are going to matter a lot more. I mean, look at the names I mentioned earlier. Tyrese Haliburton, Alperen Şengün. Those have become cornerstone guys that you build your fantasy rosters around. Players like CJ McCollum, Clint Capela, going to add, you know, Jared Allen, Nicholas Claxton. Yes, those are nice players to have. They are productive fantasy players and either will be or have been for their fantasy prime seasons. But are they a core piece of your roster that you're building around or more building with? That being said, valuing median versus upside, again, is your own interpretation. I'm trying to think of a player that's maybe not too divisive, but we'll say Jonathan Kuminga, who some people love his scoring upside, think he can become an on-ball monster and a defensive monster. And they could be right. Eileen Moore, I think he's a good scorer with his physicality. He shows good signs of that. I'm not sure about the rest of his game coming through for fantasy. So is he an upside play, or maybe someone that people are overhyping based on perceived upside? I mean, those things can be hard to really nail or put a value on, or put some arbitrary EV rating on, or odds on. You know, it's hard to say, oh, I think there's a 50% Kuminga becomes, you know, a consistent top 75, top 50 player. Is it worth trading him for Jared Allen, who's like a top 60 player probably for the next couple seasons, and has been? I don't know. It's hard to put a metric on that. And that's why I think context ultimately is a decider between evaluating these median players versus these upside players. It's a complicated question. It involves a ton of nuance, but there's so many factors at play that we discussed that come into that evaluation, and I really think you just have to decide for yourself. That being said, you know, keep in mind that the upside plays are going to feel better. But I think in terms of building long-term roster stability, I do think thinking about, you know, where, I guess for upside players, you know, okay, what's your, like, their 70, where do I see them if they hit decently well? Where do I see them impacting my team if they really don't hit too much? And where's that median if they just kind of do what they're supposed to do, but not much more or much less? Thinking about that versus the median option and evaluating your risk profile, I think that's the question you have to ask yourself when making these sorts of decisions. So applying this to your upcoming rookie drafts. Yeah, I mean, I do value players who I trust to be in the league for a long time as a nice rotation or starter level piece. Those players do have staying value. But what players have a chance to develop into hubs of their teams? I mean, I think that should be how NBA teams should draft, trying to identify players who can be hubs or cores of your team. And I think that's how we should probably look at fantasy drafts, probably a little more. That should be our goal. We want to also draft for our fantasy teams hubs and cores. Then again, factor in the context. Maybe you feel like you need that one piece, or maybe you're so confident in a player becoming a consistent piece and a consistent fantasy player, that's not worth drafting that high upside option. Again, you have to ask yourself that question.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
That will conclude this episode, of the Pun Intended podcast. Let me know how you like this format. Do you like maybe more quick hitters and quick prospects with a little dynasty notes? Let me know, either on Twitter or review, and I'll be sure to read those as they come through. As a reminder, again, check out our 2024 NBA draft profiles over at sportsethos.com. You can get that with a NBA Fantasy Pass subscription. That being said, NBA draft is only a couple days away. Enjoy, and I'll see you next time.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.